On April 19, 1967, the Reverend Alton Weigel delivered the Wenchel Lectures at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, Missouri, on effective preaching. These lectures are made possible by a generous grant from the Wenchel Foundation, established in 1952 by the Reverend J. Frederick Wenchel. Pastor Weigel is a 1945 graduate of Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, and is serving the 1,200 communicant member congregation, Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Whereas his two lectures were on preaching, what he has to say also has meaning for people who are investigating ministry. On this cassette, we have condensed Pastor Weigel's two-hour presentation to about 16 minutes. Pastor Weigel opened his lecture, setting the dynamic for ministry. Although some people think that the holy ministry is a fossilized profession, Weigel has some other ideas.
The word of the Lord came. That's our dynamic, and because it is, we can't care less what others think about it. That's our proclamation, and we could not care less what happens to us for it. That's our calling, and because it bears the power of the Lord, it's the most effective calling we can know. It's our commission, and we cannot but speak the things that we have seen and heard.
Many seminarians struggle with the call. What does it mean to be called into the holy ministry? How do I know if I am called? Why has God called me? How is my calling to ministry different from the calling that others have to serve the Lord, as a doctor or a plumber or a butcher or a candlestick maker?
We struggle with the call, in fact, against it. We are never comfortable in it. Who said we were supposed to be? His call defies attempts to package it or program it. It comes to men in different ways. It comes to men at different ages of their lives. It comes with a large assortment of reactions. But all to whom it comes have this in common, that they assert their own unfitness to the very end. We are unfit, no question. There is no reason why the word of the Lord should come to us, but God reaches into our kind of dust and ashes, taps us on the shoulder, or takes us firmly by the arm, as once he chose the least of all the peoples of the earth to be his people. Nor does he come to us by way of a dramatic and convincing sign and wonder. He uses trivial events and little people. He comes to us in earthy ways and dusty places. He finds us and commissions us and separates us from the world and sends us to the world, not because of special tools we have, but because of special tools he gives us. Not because of wisdom we have gathered, but because of wisdom he bestows in Christ. He uses us not because we are a little more than human, but because we are no more than human. We are too small to wear the robes. If we rely upon our cuteness and our cleverness and our astute mentality, our smooth personality, or even theological perception, God can use us only when his word can get to us. And he can use us and accept us for the task only by his word of forgiveness to each of us.
We asked Pastor Weigel about the parish ministry. There are so many other specialized ministries which seems so much more exciting. To be just a parish pastor seems somewhat dull. What can one expect to find in the parish ministry?
Just parish pastors, the expression haunts the church today. It conjures up peculiar images, the image of a sometimes synodical promoter and a sometimes ecclesiastical glamour boy, a not too scholarly profession that spins its wheels in churchmanship for which it was never trained. The vision of a clicking mimeograph, addressograph, postage machine and folding apparatus, extensive files of talent cards, soul accounting records, ladies' aid scrapbooks, and snappy sentences for the bulletin board. And as one who serves the parish as a live option, let me assure you that every bit of it is true. This is exactly what you may expect to find when you get out there. A desk full of communications from people whose image of the parish priest is worse than yours. A stack of while-you-were-out notes from the secretary that lists the phone calls you have to return to people of the community who are glad to have your righteousness aboard. A file for every purpose and a clattering machine for every job. It has become a rather dubious calling, and our recruitment engineers find it increasingly difficult to enlist the flower of the church's manhood for a profession that is simply not significant.
Who is responsible for this? Who paints this picture of the parish pastor? Where was the image born?
At the risk of oversimplifying, this image starts when parish pastors, preachers of the word, and shepherds of the flock become convinced that preaching is no longer relevant and God's forgiveness word in Christ no longer meaningful, when they abandon the cross for the success standards of parochial life and try to strive for a seat to the right hand or to the left of the King in the kingdom, when they are bedeviled into thinking that success can be achieved by following the tried and tested methods described in how-to manuals, which deluge their desks as good ideas. Doubting whether the ministry of the word is still significant, they become involved in a ministry of programmed solutions to ineffectiveness, which is simply not significant. Then the pulpit becomes no more than a tool for the promotion of the program, a soapbox to secure a larger budget to provide a bigger thrust, that several arsenals of paperbacks that now bombard us on the perished parish and the editorial critiques of our traditional foundations have made the parish pastor a rather threatened character whose image in the public eye and in his own is in a state of disrepair.
But it doesn't have to be that way, does it?
Your office will have filing cabinets, machinery, and organizational administrative burdens just as the clinic where you get your cardiogram and the attorney's office where you have your last will and testament on file. You will often be distracted by mundane detail, just as your dentist is who has to keep a file of records, x-rays, and account books, and who has to make out income taxes just as you do. But you can be faithful to your ministry. Your public image never will amount to much, whoever said it would. As the congregation's figurehead, you may be the object of many a cynic's snarl, but never mind. We are treated as impostors and yet are true, as unknown and yet well-known, as dying and behold we live, as punished and yet not killed, as sorrowful yet always rejoicing, as poor yet making many rich, as having nothing and yet possessing everything. And to that we add, as insignificant and yet the most.
Earlier you called the ministry a profession, implying that the pastor is a professional. What do you mean by that?
The word professional, like many other good words in our language, has suffered from the Babylonian confusion. It has been made to sound too cold, too calculating, too routine, impersonal, distasteful. In the Christian concept of vocation, there is no difference. Every Christian man is a full-time servant of the Lord and of his church. Every Christian man is occupied in church vocation. We cannot make distinctions, stated or implied, in the holy ministry of Christ between the layman's calling and the pastor's calling. Both are in the holy ministry. When our recruitment agents use a term like full-time service of the church or the equally misleading church vocations, they make distinctions that cannot be supported. Honesty impels us to suggest the title professional servants of the church and to use the word professional in its pure and not in its perverted meaning.
How do you look at the pastor as a professional?
A preacher is a professional, and that in the exercise of his profession, he is responsible not only to his Lord who called him, but biblically, ecclesiastically, and financially, he is also responsible to the priesthood of believers. They may not be his judges, but they are his fellows in the ministry. His ministry is not his own prerogative. Nor is the preacher free to determine his own function. His ministry has as its reason for being only the preaching of the word and the administration of the sacraments, which are the marks of the church and to which he is charged by the assembly of believers. Obviously, this isn't all he does, nor is it all that any congregation does. But this is the central function that is served or ought to be served by every other function.
How does the pastor relate to other professional people?
This is a profession that cannot be exalted over other callings and professions. Leaving it to move into another calling may not be disgraceful in itself, although the reason may be questioned. Or leaving a successful business or vocation to become a minister as a professional does not elevate us to a higher echelon among the saints. God often finds his men in other callings and impels them to come over. But neither is the ministry as a profession to be degraded. As a bearer of the word, and not for any other reason, this office is worthy of double honor, for in the honor of the man who bears the word, we honor the word and not the man. What insolence is this that would regard a call to service as a personal honor? But precisely for this reason, that we serve the honor of the Lord, and because we hold this office by the effective grace of God, then as a professional man among professional men, the preachers take back seats to no one. The complex of inferiority that gives rise to a variety of distorted ministries has no place in the ministerium. His ministry deals with the issues of life and of death more than any other. He has the tools for a more effective ministry than any other.
That may be true, but a pastor as a professional surely isn't paid professional wages. Will you comment on that?
Dare we speak about heroic sacrifices in the practice of our ministerial profession in our age? My experience has been that preachers have their share of comforts. They manage to afford a large variety of household gadgets, a new and air-conditioned model every other year, and none of them appear too undernourished. They no longer need to live as objects of public patronage. Their professional stipends may not compare too well with others if they are published in cold dollar figures, but no one ever said they should, I hope. And you may call this a kind of fuzzy faith, perhaps, but it's amazing how the Lord provides. We dare not measure sacrifices by the dollar yardstick.
What kind of life does the pastor live? Can you share some of your experiences with us?
The preacher's life is not his own. His time is not his own. He is subject to the pressures and demands of the burdens on the hearts of those he serves. He is ready to lay down his life for straying sheep. He offers on the altar of his service both to God and to his fellows the very best he has and the very best that he is capable of giving and the very best of his developed skills. He knows no 40-hour week. He knows no 8-hour day. He has one aim, to be the kind of workman who doesn't have to be ashamed, to prepare himself and keep himself prepared for the function of the ministry in word and sacrament.
That means continued professional growth, doesn't it?
This seminary has never graduated a finished product, although some of its products may have been finished on the day they graduate. Anyone who spends two decades in the ministry with nothing but his practical experience added to whatever he may have learned here is hopelessly out of it.
How does a pastor keep with it? How do you continue your professional growth?
Growth in professional competence requires a subscription to and study of professional theological journals. It requires the purchase or the borrowing of books that are in-depth studies in theology and not mere sample copies of letters to delinquent contributors. It may require continuing study in the graduate school of this seminary or another. It requires the reading of our great contemporary preachers, not all of them with Lutheran labels. Not for purposes of imitation, but for freshness, and to know what's going on inside of people and to be equipped to serve this present age, it may require the perusal of the world's bestsellers now and then, a survey of the hopelessness reflected in the modern novel or play, and perhaps an evening at the theater.
In other words, a pastor has to know a lot about everything, doesn't he?
A word of caution is in order. The preacher as a pro must recognize the discipline in which he is expected to be competent and stick to that. He recognizes that his own profession has its limitations and that he is not expert in every branch of learning and in every professional discipline. The preacher is a mediator of the healing word, but he is not a medic and he doesn't practice medicine. He has a course or two along the way in the psychology of man, and his ministry requires some understanding of psychology. but he does not qualify as a clinical psychologist. He knows something of the social needs of people, but he is not a social worker. In his staff relations, he must honor and respect the competence of those with whom he works who have been trained in other disciplines. The principal of the Christian day school, the teacher, the minister of music. The preacher is a pro, and a true professional recognizes a professional.
Thank you, Pastor Wadle, for your comments on the ministry. If you would like to hear more what Pastor Wadle has to say about the ministry, and in particular about preaching, you are invited to listen to his entire lecture, available on tape through the Concordia Seminary tape library. It is listed under the title, The Word of the Lord Came, The Preacher as Pro. Or if you'd like, you can read it in the 1967 November issue of Concordia Theological Monthly under the title, The Word of the Lord Came. This is David Deppe.